Mr. Ward from the NAACP, the Urban League, in addition to his work in the American Muslim Mission. He originated the adult education program in the American Muslim Mission. He's the author of numerous books on education, and his active work as the head of the chairman of the Education Committee and aiding Imam Wafi Muhammad and his educational concerns recently coordinated and a very successful educational conference for our community in Sedalia, North Carolina. In addition to the work that he does as the imam of his masjid, but his work in the field of education is outstanding, and we're very happy and very honored to award Dr. Abdul Aleem Shabazz Distinguished Educator Award. Thank you so much, sir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. With the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lah. I bear witness there is no God but Allah, the one and the alone. Wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. And I bear witness that Muhammad is his slave servant and his messenger. Alhamdulillah, all praise is due Allah. I thank the committee for giving this award. It's a very humbling experience. And I say to you in conclusion, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. The next awardee, like all awardees, are very famous people. Not because we say so, because of what they have done. I would like to introduce to you the three-time world heavyweight champion of boxing in the world. He's a Muslim. And that is a great, great achievement. He is a follower of Imam Wahiduddin Muhammad in the religion of Al-Islam. But he has done some other things in his career, and I want to speak about those very briefly. Besides the fisticuffs, he has set a great example of courage. He's been a person who has done a lot in the way of inspiring the youth to have some self-worth, to show some self-dignity. He has aided with his big heart and his big purse. Well, it used to be big purse, anyway. He has aided the Sister Clara Muhammad schools by helping the masjids all across America. I know for certain because he has helped Masjid Malcolm Shabazz Masjid in a time when we were in foreclosure. So I know that his services are great in helping the oppressed and helping those who are needy. I would like to address myself to one thing as we bring him to the stand. As a fighter, you know that he has won many fights and they have been very, very, very tough. He's lost a few here lately. However, the greatest struggle and the greatest fight that I think that he has ever performed in his life was when he took a stand, not to give up his religion, not to give up his God, and be willing to sacrifice all of this physical enjoyment, so to speak, or pain, if you will, or even the arena of earning a great, great sums of money, millions, if you will, in order to maintain his religious stand in Al-Islam. That, to me, was the most courageous of all stands and the greatest fight that he has ever won, to be a Muslim, to hold his faith. It brings us now to this rostrum, Muhammad Ali. Thank you.
Brother, thank you very much for this award. I have many awards in my base at home, but I promise you, if it be the will of Allah, this will hang over top all my awards. I thank Allah for all of my brothers and sisters and friends and fans that supported and followed me over the years. Many people are now wondering, what's Ali going to do now? Me too. But I said I have many offers, many things I could do, many directions I could take. But I sat down and I thought about what it is that would really please me. And that's doing all I can to promote Islam and tell the billions of fans that I have who Allah is, who Islam is, and what we represent. And in my seeking for various things to do to promote, I ran across a record the other day, and I made the brother give it to me, and I want you to hear it. You got to hear this. I don't mean to offend nobody. As you know, we Muslims believe in Jesus just like everybody else. Not just like, but we do believe. And I got permission from Brother Jabbar, and Chief played this, and you know, they gave me the okay, so I'm happy. And soon, this may be on sale around the country for you to get. Thank you. my gift. And now that Allah has blessed me with my boxing career, I made a promise to Allah, let me get out of this thing well, still pretty, not hurt. I'm going to do all I can to work with the cause. So I'm going to take this tape here and take it throughout many churches, many schools, wherever they've accepted, and let the people listen. And thank you for everything, Samuel.
We are indeed blessed, brothers and sisters. And just to think that who could have been inspired to even write a song about racial images if we had not had the leadership of Iman Wafidi Muhammad. We thank Allah indeed. We thank Allah indeed. Alhamdulillah. We looked at the image and we didn't know where to go with it. So all praise is due to Allah. Our next awardee, is the Sister Clara Muhammad Education Foundation, Educational Foundation. And we are really very honored to be able to award the foundation for the tremendous work that they have done since 1976. The Clara Muhammad Memorial Educational Foundation came into existence in December 1976 and is a not-for-profit organization. Its sole purpose is to aid needy and deserving students from the total community. Established to make or assist in making available educational opportunities through scholarships and other benefits, the foundation has initiated and implemented successful fundraising activities. Currently, the foundation operates a resale shop located in Chicago and sponsors and maintains the library of Sister Clara Muhammad School in Chicago. In addition to a gift shop located in the Pioneer Office Building. In addition to maintaining these places, periodically the foundation sponsors giveaway bazaars throughout the city, as well as weekly baked good sales every Friday after Jumu'ah prayer. The Sister Clara Muhammad Foundation has been highly contributive in making cash donations to many institutions, including La Rabida Hospital for Children, the United Negro College Fund, and Sister Clara Muhammad Schools across the United States. The entire pediatrics ward of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad Health Facility was furnished by the Sister Clara Muhammad Educational Foundation. This foundation also provides uniforms for students attending the Sister Clara Muhammad School in Chicago. The Sister Clara Muhammad Memorial Educational Foundation, in addition, has made noteworthy monetary contributions toward educational scholarships to, and many students have received financial scholarships to attend the University of Illinois, Harvard, St. George, Hamline University, Visitation School, Purdue University, the University of Chicago, Rochester Institute of Technology, Northwestern University, National College of Chiropractic, Howard University, and Morehouse College. Sister Shirley Muhammad has been the president and founder of the Sister Clara Muhammad Foundation since its inception and has worked diligently on behalf of the foundation to have made all of these tremendous contributions to the community. We therefore take great honor in awarding the Sister Clara Muhammad Distinguished Educator Award to the Sister Clara Muhammad Educational Foundation and Sister Shirley Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum. On behalf of the sisters that work in the foundation, I accept this award. Thank you. Thank you.
Sister Shirley asked me also to mention that one of the best bookkeepers that the foundation had was the first bookkeeper, Sister Renee Akbar, and she's here with us, and she asked me to please acknowledge her. Alhamdulillah. Hello, Esther. The final awardee that I will present this evening to you, brothers and sisters, is one who we feel exemplifies the tremendous spirit of courage, commitment, and dedication exemplified by Sister Clara Muhammad. Over 50 years ago, Sister Clara Muhammad pioneered, in addition to this, with the support of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Sister Clara Muhammad School, then known as Muhammad Universities of Islam. It was a tremendous task under tremendous adversity. Before the concept of independent schools became very popular, Sister Clara Muhammad and others were working diligently, pioneering and establishing the kind of educational system that would address the needs of our children, because our children have unique and special needs. Therefore, the Maked Awardee, we feel, exemplifies with the tremendous diligence and commitment that this sister has made toward the establishment of the Westside Preparatory School, the sacrifices that we all know, the fortitude that is necessary for the advancement of a project that is of good, that is not funded by anyone. We feel that the Sister Clara Muhammad Distinguished Educator Award is very worthy, deserving to Miss Marva Collins. Collins will be with us in one moment to deliver her talk to us. Okay. Thank you all very much, and I accept this award tonight to hold in trust for all children everywhere, hoping that one day they shall all find their way. It is indeed a pleasure to be here tonight, and I hope that each of you will find something that I might say tonight to help our children, which ultimately will become our future generation. If they lose their way, then we must begin to think what will happen to all of us. I was once told by my mother that she's very happy that I became an educator, because she said with my determination, had I decided to become a criminal, that I certainly would have been a terrible one. But I've always believed that determination moves the world and frustration stops it. When others became frustrated with the problems of our society, I became more determined to do something about the problems of our children. Rather than following the solutions of the experts, I began to listen to the problems of our children. Our school is now greatly emulated and visited constantly by people not only from the United States, but by people throughout the world. Despite the fact that our school originated not to be like other schools, I find it very interesting that now other schools want to find out how we do what we do and why we do what we do.
We have no teacher desk. We have no foolishness in our schools. We have no things, and our children realize quite emphatically that school is not a place for fun and games. Each teacher must have the energy to walk from student to student each day to remediate errors before those errors become permanent ones. When we give our children a standardized test, we do not say the cutesy jargon that the experts have written on the test. We do not say to the children, this is a game to find out how much you have learned. We tell them this is a test, and it just may determine whether you sit on the sidelines the rest of your life catching the crumbs of the mainstream, or whether you shall march in that mainstream. We do not lie to our children as to where they are when they come to our school. We do not play with their academic lives. We tell them exactly where they are academically and where together we must go. I teach with a kind of angered desperation, a desperation against the failures of children who come from homes where hope is often a carpet of glass in their nearest front yard. I'm determined to make each day positively different in the life of each child so that they may dare to dream of a tomorrow. We have no open classrooms, learning stations, and a do-it-your-own-thing kind of attitude. We have large classes, no teacher aides or gimmicks. We have no time for throwing blocks, a time to write on children's report cards. Your child is not working to his fullest capacity. We make certain that we get out of each child all that that student has to give. Our children realize that school is not a place where they come to be entertained. We do not have time to plot machines and things that think for children. They learn to use the innate tools that God gave them, their eyes, their brains, their ears, curiosity. And instead of pictures, we encourage them to draw their own pictures in their own minds. We routinize all activities, even pencil sharpening. No child is allowed to sharpen pencils after 9 o'clock. We make certain that an adequate supply of pencils are always available before school begins. What would happen to the future of any employee who made frequent trips to the bathroom or for coffee breaks every few moments? Why then can't we begin to make school a part of the real world? We have no difficulty with our children watching too much television, for we realize that we must compete with the television ratings. Or we also know that if children cannot read, what makes us think that they would not watch television anyway? We do not write inane notes home to parents saying that your child will not behave in class. Please talk to your child. When this occurs, the child realizes that we, the teachers, are out of control. We therefore control our own discipline problems with highly motivational lessons that are prepared nightly with great detail. When a child comes in saying, you know, you see, and you dig, we do not see this as a red flag waving over his head signaling that this child can only become a janitor. We see this very child with the capacity to become a scientist, a lawyer, a doctor, or anything else he would like to become. We never have enough of anything in our school. Paper and supplies, and even room, is always scarce. We have to turn the lights off oftentimes when they're not in use. The only thing we have in abundance is hope, love, determination, the belief in the self-worth of each child, and every child in our school reading at grade level or beyond. We know that our children are capable of making a positive contribution to this world, and that each child realizes that they are very special to us and to their communities. We do not give substandard lessons and expect standardized skills. We do not become anchorized on the excuse that parents do not care. The more a parent does not care, the more we know that we must care. The experts tell us that children without breakfast and the proper diet cannot function in school. They never bother, however, to tell us that these same children without skills will never function, and besides, their diets only become worse with no skills. We do not listen to the experts as to what is best for our children, for we realize that it was the experts that got us into this mess in the first place. We still do not believe that one can do an adequate job of cleaning up the debris of an earthquake with a toothbrush. Our Band-Aid, too, never stops a hemorrhage. We never know if we will have enough operating money to keep the school going from one month to the next. Yet we know that we must either find a way or we'll make a way. We know, too, that only a fool hopes and a genius creates. If we taught a blind child, we certainly would not say to that child, I hope you like dogs because you will have to smell them the rest of your life. Then why would we say to a child, I hope you like failure because I feel that you're statistically too inferior to learn. I hope that you like being bored because this is going to be a very boring year. Westside Preparatory School has repeatedly taken someone else's sawdust and we have continually made bored. Yet when people see these same children, they all exclaim, these children are so bright. It seems to me then that we must tag and label children the same way we do merchandise. The word teacher is a Latin word meaning to lead or to draw out. This to me means that each of our students are born with unique and special talents. It seems to me that only after these children enter school that they lose ownership of their pride, their self-reliance, and a pride of being and becoming a total person with unique and special gifts to offer society. We therefore lead each child to the threshold of his own mind, and we draw out only what was already there. The average curriculum plays charades with the child's life. Nothing is expected of the child in the classroom. We have the attitude that this is the way they are. Our those children are just a bit too statistically inferior to amount to very much anyway. And we begin to use the old and trite excuses of how fettered the homes of the children are. And we feel emphatically that the best thing that can be done for these children is to keep them quiet, be kind to them, and expect nothing from them. Since we expect nothing, we of course receive nothing in return. The results have been millions of children turned into the world in abysmal failure through no fault of their own. Let us think for a moment what might have happened to Abraham Lincoln, who at age 14 still had not learned to read, and his stepmother, coming to their very humble cabin, brought a copy of Aesop's Fables. And Abraham Lincoln at this age still had not learned to read. He would sit by the fireside night after night with Aesop's Fables, tracing the letters in the ashes. Finally, he learned to write, Abraham Lincoln has hand and pen, he'll be good, but only God knows when. I shudder to think what might have happened to Abraham Lincoln, to all of these people today, who would certainly have been placed in a learning disability center. Doctors seem to bury their errors in a cemetery, and educators seem to bury their errors in a learning disability room. More time is spent in the average classroom getting reports written about children, so there's very little time left to get the lives of the children right. Enough studies have been done about inner city children and learning disabled children to put our economy back into first-rate shape. Perhaps if we studied the children less and taught more, we just might find out that it is those very studies that have ink-blotted the souls of children, that have stained their minds and tested their spirits until there's nothing left to measure. We accept in far too many schools what we call black English, and yet we cruelly expect these children to function as universal citizens in the marketplace. We give these children substandard education and expect standardized citizens. This to me is cruel at most and tyranny at its worst. It also says that education, like health, is not easily conquered. The average classroom is a milieu of children that have been made to think that the average day consists of putting away clay and things. Toilet recess and lining up the chairs at their desk seems to be the order of the day. The average child learns to hate school at a very early age, and our hallowed halls of learning actually become incarceration centers. These children sit in militaristic rows until they are either pushed out or they finally drop out. However, by the time this happens, they have usually choked on overdoses of ignorance. I'm beginning to believe that Nietzsche was right when he said, education was designed to take only a few people to great and lasting heights. However, the best laid plans of men can often become entries in the Guinness Books of Records. The miseducation of the inner city child is no longer just a poor man's burden. It has also become the middle class malady too. We receive thousands of letters from frustrated parents in places that I'd at least expect the hydra-headed monster of miseducation to rear its ugly head. Parents from all across the country come into our school to bring their children to visit for a day or two and ask me to evaluate their children's problems. This year, one of the most powerful families in Chicago brought his child to our school in February with a reading score of 4.4. And that child, in just 2 months, scored 8.4 and was accepted into a fine private high school. A college junior came in from a very fine college last week. He's already 22 years old and reading at a fifth grade level. The college now begins to feel conscience pains and have decided that I am to bring this student up to a level proficient for graduation from college. The reading expert accompanied this student to our school, and the expert now agrees that they were wrong in leading this student to believe that he will be able to conquer the world in a pair of gym shoes. Another student was told that he would never, never read. That child is now 11 years of age and scored 12.5 in all areas on the 18C California test. Another student had been enrolled in 13 different schools before entering West Sagittarius School. That student is now doing well. He has been welcomed to success, and his trip to different schools ended with his enrollment in our school. His former records have been burned, and that child has now been given a new lease on life. The children that were enrolled in mental health centers to perform and behave like normal children, and all because we have not taken a break from daily hard work. A belief in the self-worth and the self-dignity of each child. We do not worship at the shrine of excuses. We have not taken a so what, it's not my problem attitude. There is no graffiti on our walls at school or on the outside of the building. We have never had the police in our school. We have no office personnel that babysits children during the day. Children are not expelled. They are not sent home. And they are not isolated in Stygian corners. We have taught these children how to tick, and ultimately they now want to learn how to tick better. Children are not bored to the stage of misbehaving by having to read C-Lad, C-Band, C-Band Run. We do not miscalculate their intelligence by making the program more and more relevant, and hence easier and easier. We do not have textbooks with pictures for entertainment. Our textbooks contain more text and less pictures. Syllogistic reasoning, critical and analytical thinking is a daily regime in our school. We do not aim for a half education. We teach the total child. Our children are not taught to memorize words and picture clues that they will not or cannot read in another context. Daily we give our students heavy doses of phonics. And for those words that are non-phonetic, We use these words as sounds in isolation. Our children do not merely learn facts, they learn to use facts. We can train fields, but children in our school are trained to use the facts. We do not make the world remote, ominous, and obscurely unreachable for our students. We realize that we cannot afford to indulge ourselves in what is easy and in what is relevant, but we are painfully aware of how many studies have been done announcing our inferiority, our lack of intelligence, and yes, our lack of organization and motivation. Therefore, we realize that each day we must use our newly gained skills to the fullest and never allow dust to settle on any of those skills, so that our children may dare to stand up and shout, "This is my time and my place, and I will seize this time and my place." We realize that education is painful, but ignorance, too, is more painful. Visitors to our school have often said, "But these do not look like poor children." I never realized that poor children had certain configurations. The very wealthy child in our school is taught with the same attitude as a very poor child. And in many cases, the poor students have excelled more than the wealthier students. We do not share the universal belief that poverty has anything to do with the function of the brain. No man can help being born poor, but no man has to be ignorant. And no child will ever leave Westchester Territory School wishing that they had become literate citizens of this world. This is the one choice we do not allow our students to make, and that is the choice to fail. If educators, by some inconceivable grace, were to give the preconceived ideas, to give up on the preconceived ideas of how children learn and which child cannot learn, it would be a long-awaited evolutionary step for mankind. This perhaps would be isometrical to man's primordial exit from the sea. The grotesque and old habit of wriggling down inside of other people's skin to tell what they can or cannot do is a hoary idea developed almost 2,000 years ago by Aristotle, when he declared that ordinary people certainly could not think for themselves. Negative attitudes about our students may make our adrenaline run, it may give our life drama and momentary meaning, but we all pay for the permanent failure of each citizen in our society. Every study done about our students have had illustrious hopes enunciated and delightful principles expressed. It is about time we put those principles and hopes into action. But where are the educators who actually get in the classroom and introduce children to the problems of the real world? Where are the educators who actually give students a solution to the basic problem of survival? Where are the schools that are miniature societies that prepare children for the real world? Drawing lines from here to there, checking true and false answers, and using prepackaged lesson plans have denied far too many children the right to become literate citizens of our society. Children, therefore, cannot compose a literate sentence, they cannot think a lofty thought, and most of all, we have denied them the inalienable right to a full life with meaning and purpose. Our violent excuses for the failure of so many children have exempted excellence from prevailing in our society. Do we really want future historians to see the horror of our miseducation and conceive us as a people in history that madly went about our business as usual? Can we actually produce so many children that could not read their diplomas? A medicine label? A street sign? A newspaper? Our students are like mirrors, and they do reflect us, whether we like it or not. Can we continue to allow miseducation to make its masterpiece while we continue to arm ourselves with excuses that are beginning to trip over each other? A remarkable victory can be won in this country
and we begin to face, as educators, the dread reckoning with the truth. We must begin to realize that our excuses for children not learning to read, write, think, and compute is beginning to wear thin. Parents are beginning to realize that they and their children are suffering at the hands of their reluctance to act. And a revolution in education is forthcoming. Teaching is no miracle. It happens because the teacher is willing to admit that when children fail, they too have failed. We are all in this educational mess together. Each of us represents somebody, everybody, anybody, and nobody. There's a massive job to be done, and everybody must be willing to do that job. Everybody cannot wait for somebody to educate our children, and anybody with patience and determination can. Therefore, can we afford to say that nobody did it? The ever-growing problem of illiteracy in our country can be halted with a glimmer of light from each of us here tonight. It is true that most people yield most painfully to change, and to be the pioneer that says, this is enough, I'll no longer be a part of this dismal failure. It does indeed take courage. You will emphatically become targets of criticism. You will have the disapproval of your colleagues, but it will all be worth it when we see children's eyes filling wonder like a cup. For wisdom rules, courage defends the laws and the peace of a society, and temperance balances the economy. It is indeed more difficult to face what is painful than to abstain from what is pleasant. And change is never an easy enterprise, nor is truth an easy taskmaster. But we must begin to face the reality that far too many children in this country are failing. Far too many children will never see the bright lights of excellence, or how to even pursue excellence. We must become untied to our former excuses of failure. Let each of us here continue to let the experts do everything and the curriculum facilitators do anything, and that will leave us nothing to do but teach our children. And they will not be like badly made garments for the stitches, the seams, and the edges shelf. Let us once again remember the words of Aristotle. Children should be educated because of their minds and not because of who their parents are. Let us once again begin to make the poor student good and the good student superior, with no excuses in between. We must all again begin to relight the candles of excellence that have almost flickered away. All of our children are tall candles and simply need a wick. Our children are champions, and they are worth wrestling with. We are pledged to any cause if we approve of it. And it is time that all of us begin to surrender and throw down our arms of excuses before excellence. And if we find excellence in the hands of our opponents, we must embrace it too, for the sake of our children. We must once again ask not our students for an accounting of his lessons, but of the strength and acceptance of that lesson, and to encourage each student to judge the profit that he's made from his lesson. Not by testimony of remembering, of mastering facts, but of his life and how it affects him. Let us not attempt to make children captives under the authority of our thoughts, but each child must be taught to enter the threshold of his own mind, so that they can dare to become guardians in a world that will either...